was open. Good afternoon, everyone. We'll go a little bit out of order here today, and I will open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2699. Jamie, if you could provide us with a brief overview.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2699 deals with brownfield property tax incentives. This comes to you from the House. And there is a permissive property tax exemption that is allowed for brownfield. So those are properties that are dirty or toxic or need to be cleaned up in some way. And this would allow those permissive programs to be also stacked with other property tax incentives, and specifies that in that process, in the stacking of the process, that the stacking itself and the approach in that would have to be specified and concurrently with the application. And so you, for instance, could have a property that needs to be cleaned up, gets a brownfield property tax exemption, and so it's either partially or completely off the roll, and then it is cleaned up, and then it's a low-income housing project, and then it would go forward under that that property tax exemption or incentive treatment as well.
Okay, Senator Frederick is here to testify. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
You too. For the record, I'm Lou Frederick, State Senator from District 22, North and Northeast Portland. I have been involved in this, in trying to get the brownfields cleaned up for quite a while. In fact, Representative Senator Bentz and I we initially talked about this in 2011 because I got a map from the DEQ that showed that in my district, my house district at the time, we had 147 brownfields. In Senator Bentz's district, about the same number. His were spread over a little bit further distance than mine. At the time, but what is clear is that there are now in the Senate district at least 200 brownfields contaminated sites that need to be cleaned up, and we're trying to find a way to give an incentive and an easier path to cleaning them up, to making them productive again. These are old gas stations, dry cleaners, photography shops, mechanic shops, battery places, battery sales places, and they are scattered throughout your districts, quite frankly. You've probably seen them, don't know that they're brownfields, but no one seems to be building anything on them because they don't quite know what to do about them. This changes that. And I've got to say, I was really happy when I did the tour of with the Student Success Committee. We ended up in Baker City, and as part of the tour, there was a class we went into where the students had found out that the district had been given a brownfield, and the students found out what a brownfield was, and so they went and they discovered what they needed to do to clean it up. They went through the process that we passed in 2011 to discover what they could do and how they could get it cleaned up. They got it cleaned up. They didn't do the cleanup themselves, but they got it cleaned up and sold the property and bought another brownfield. And so they've been so successful that the community colleges in the area are now taking on that as a class and as a program to train people to be able to clean up brownfields. This is, I was floating about 5 feet above the ground when the students started telling me about this, because they didn't know that I'd been involved in that particular bill. But it's exactly the kind of thing we're trying to get done, cleaning up brownfields as much as we possibly can, making them active and productive again. And so I'm hoping that you will pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from Senator Frederick?
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas, Vice Chair Bentz, members of the committee. For the record, Eric Knoll with the City of Portland. Thank you for the opportunity to provide brief remarks in support of House Bill 2699. I also want to thank Senator Frederick for coming and providing remarks here this afternoon. You'll notice on OLIS a letter from members of the Oregon Brownfields Coalition, as well as a copy of the presentation that was provided to other committees throughout this legislative process. Out of respect for time, I won't go through those materials, but wanted to make them available for this committee to review. In 2016, the legislature unanimously approved House Bill 4084, which created the Brownfield Property Tax Exemption Program. And as was described, it is a permissive property tax exemption program that local governments can opt into. Currently, Marion County has adopted the program, and the city of Portland is in the process of adopting a program. As we work through the process of developing an ordinance at the City of Portland, one piece of the 2016 bill stuck out to us and appeared to be somewhat of an unintended consequence in crafting sideboards on that legislation. And that was it explicitly prevented the Brownfield property tax exemption from being used with any other tax incentive program. So if a developer wanted to build affordable housing on a Brownfield site, under current law, they would have to choose the Brownfield exemption or an affordable housing exemption. They could not use both at the same time. So this legislation comes forward to allow that to be used up to 100% of the property tax liability. It wouldn't be cutting a check back to a property owner. But if you know a development were to offer multiple public benefits, it's our belief that multiple incentives should be available to them to incentivize those public benefits, such as affordable housing or economic development, if the tool so applies. Additionally, this bill would direct implementing jurisdictions to specify how multiple tax incentives will apply to an eligible property and notify the county assessor so as to clear up confusion and ensure uniform application across multiple projects. This was something we worked with the Department of Revenue and the county assessors to clarify in developing this bill, and that's why you see an A engrossed version in front of you. Tax exemption programs are an important tool for local governments to incentivize public benefits, and we're here today seeking to improve an existing tool and urge your yes vote. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Eric. Senator Benz, you're one of the sponsors of this bill. Any questions or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have any questions. I will point out that back in 2011, that one of the driving influences of our efforts was the fact that in our review of how much or how little industrial land was available, we found that most of that which was available in Portland was in condition of a brownfield. So the only way that this city was going to grow its industrial base is by cleaning it up. So that was the prompt for cleaning something up. So I'm happy to see this bill.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Hass, and I just really want to express my very strong support for this bill, and I'm very thankful to you as a chair for allowing this to be part of the dialogue here, representing Inner Southeast Portland. We've had pieces of property, I mean, and this is the case, you know, throughout the whole state, but Inner Southeast Portland had one lot after another has sat for so long, and some of them have been cleaned up, but it cost, a fortune, and therefore very, very expensive. Well, I'm going to deduce that expensive pieces of investments had to occur on those properties in order for the developer to get their money back because they couldn't build a standard building, if you will. It had to be a very, very sophisticated development in order to get the money back because we have so many of these sites. And so this will be a great incentive, and I really hope that we're able to pass this. So I don't really have a question. You did a great summary there, so thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Well, are we ready to go, Senator Benz?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2699A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Benz moves House Bill 2699 to the Oregon State Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 2699 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with the due pass recommendation. Senator Benz?
Senator Frederick, this probably
Frederick? Okay. Senator Frederick will be the carrier. And I'll close out that public hearing and work session. And I will open up a work session on our favorite bill, Senate Bill 851, Guilty. Are you coming up, Chris? Or, I'm sorry, Caitlin. And with the floor session coming up in 15 minutes, I'm not sure that we have enough time to vote this bill out, but I wanted to let the committee know, Senator Taylor and Senator Benz, that this is, there's no pathway forward here without some disagreement from somebody. We have dash five and six that have opposing viewpoints, so we may need to do some homework, but we also need to pass something here in the next few days. So, Kaylin, you have some new information from the last time we
So Chair Haas, members of the committee, so both the dash five and the dash six amendments are replacing the original bill. I've described the dash six here, and after going through that, I can tell you the difference with the dash five. Basically, what this does is we're trying to avoid a double deduction in the case of guilty and in the case of IRC 245A, which is dealing with foreign source dividend income. So two big things there. And then also there's a piece that deals with the repatriation that we dealt with for businesses last session. This is looking at it on the personal side, and that is for tax years 2017 and 2018. I'm sorry, 2017 and forward. And there is language in the amendment that prevents Department of Revenue from imposing penalties and interest on the tax related to this PIT repatriation. So the only difference between the dash five and the dash six deals with some apportionment language. And if we could pull up, I think Isaac is pulling up the dash five on page three, I believe it's line 22. So, yes, okay, so on page three, line 22, so this talks about basically factor representation for guilty, and the language is indicating that so the amount of any dividend or guilty that is apportionable and that is not subtracted under subsection 2, so the amount that we're actually taxing, shall be as appropriate included in or excluded from the sales factor. The disagreement that Senator Haas mentioned has to do with the words "or excluded from," and so the dash 6 removes those words. And I think it also removes as appropriate. So the dash six says, which I think I have here, reading line 22 of this section shall be included in the sales factor as provided by the apportionment formula. So it's this really minor change in language, but I guess there's some disagreement between taxpayers and the department about this excluded from language. That's the only difference between those two amendments.
So it must, I mean, it's obviously something that affects the bottom line here and tax liability.
Yeah, so, yes, potentially. I guess the way that this was described to me from people in industry is that this is a source of potential litigation. So I think the outcome of that litigation could affect the bottom line. Getting to the revenue impact, which I believe is now up, I can talk through that in some detail. And basically, we have a no revenue impact because a lot of these things are either already currently being addressed or are part of the forecast already.
No so, revenue impact on five and six? Or
This is just on the six.
Okay.
Could you repeat that?
Yes. This revenue impact is on the six. Hmm. And if we could pull it up, that would be great. So overall, it's a no revenue impact, and the three pieces I described earlier, we are changing things, but there are more clarification or things to avoid a double deduction, to avoid a large negative. And so I'll talk through each of these in a little bit of detail. So the first paragraph discusses the personal income repatriation on the personal income taxation side that I mentioned earlier. This is how the Department of Revenue is already administering or enforcing this. So it's part of kind of this current status quo. The changes are clarification that this should be added back. So that's not going to affect our revenue impact here. The second paragraph talks about guilty and the fact that within the bill, both in the dash five and six, we are referring, Oregon will treat guilty as a dividend or as if it were a dividend, and that you do not receive the federal level 50% deduction because within Oregon, we're going to give an 80% dividends received deduction. So we believe this is how the department would have treated this in the absence of legislation. So again, no change in revenue, but having this in legislation decreases the likelihood of increased litigation in the future. So this is kind of a more certain approach. It provides certainty for taxpayers and less litigation. And then finally, this deals with, so the last piece here deals with the foreign source portion of dividends, and this is in IRC 245 Cap A. Again, it's trying to avoid a double deduction. And again, it's kind of the same intuition as before. Because this is consistent with how the department would have treated this in the absence of legislation, we're just making things clearer and more certain for taxpayers, so this won't affect revenue.
Okay, is the Department of Revenue standing by to weigh in on these? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Deanna Mack with Department of Revenue. And the issue that we identified with the difference between the dash five and the dash six does relate to the amount of income that's included in this, in that gets factor representation. And as you recall, the larger the number on the bottom of the denominator, the lower the Oregon percentage, the lower the tax liability. So we want to just make sure that you understand the dash six amendment, if you do remove the words excluded from sales factor apportionment, that there are other areas of law in Oregon law where we would continue to interpret that not all of this income, the net amount, would have factor representation in the sales factor for the types of receipts that would otherwise be includable, not be includable under other areas of Oregon law. So for example, with UDTPA taxpayers, a portionable income is made up of two components of income. There's transactional income and functional income. Transactional income is given factor representation and functional income is not. We interpret this amendment to continue existing treatment based on each taxpayer's specific facts and circumstances related to the income under other areas of Oregon law. This amendment does not mean that all apportionable income has factor representation, which if it were interpreted that way would dilute the sales factor and result in otherwise lower tax for taxpayers with functional type income. Other types of taxpayers would follow other rules. They're not all taxpayers aren't following UDTPA, but they would follow their specific rules in statute as well. And additionally, we believe that factor representation would not be appropriate for the amounts that are fully deducted under IRC 245A. So they're not reporting any income to Oregon, so there would not be factor representation for that income either. So I just wanted to get on the record the way we are interpreting the dash six, so that you're, if that's where you adopt, then that's where we would, how we would act. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to try and answer them.
Senator Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Deanna, so the difference between the dash five and the dash six again, please.
The dash five, Mr. Chair and Senator Benz, the dash five just says, just provides clarity to the existing law that says that that net amount of, you're including 100% of income, you're deducting 80%. So that net amount, based on the taxpayer's facts and circumstances, if it's a portionable income, it will either be included in the sales factor or excluded from the sales factor according to the taxpayer's specific facts and circumstances. The dash six simply says that it will be included in. So it implies that it will never be excluded from. But there are other areas of Oregon law that still must be followed to clarify that it is not always included in the sales factor.
So which the dash five or the dash six will result in less litigation?
Mr. Chair and Senator Benz, I don't know which taxpayers would sue, but the current law under other areas still have the same, in my opinion, have the same outcome. So if we assert that there's no factor representation under either amendment, they may argue then. I don't think that it's an increase, in my opinion, that there will be increased litigation from either of them, because this is current law. It's just clarifying how taxpayers get to include or not include items of income in their sales factor.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So to go back to the chair's question, the revenue impact of the dash five is how much? Zero, none? Or I'm trying to, is there a difference in revenue impacts between the dash five and the dash six?
Mr. Chair and Senator Benz, I don't think there would be. I think that they are going to be interpreted and handled the same way. But I would leave that to LRO to make an official statement.
Sure. Oh, I'm struggling to find some justification for one or the other. Which one's best?
Mr. Chair and Senator Benz, the department thinks that the dash five amendment is best because it very clearly states that either it is the item of income is either included in the sales factor or excluded from based on the taxpayer's circumstances. So the door swings both ways based on that specific taxpayer's circumstances. The dash six leaves, it's not, in my opinion, not as clear because it just says it shall be included in. It doesn't say that the door can swing both ways.
Well, Mr. Chair, so who's enthusiastic about the dash six?
Mr. Chair and Senator Benz, I haven't had any conversations with anyone on the dash six other than LRO.
There's some testimony in OLIS for some business groups supporting
the dash six. Mm-hmm.
So, thank you. We're going to leave it right here. We do have to pass this bill. Let's carry it over to maybe tomorrow or Monday. In the meantime, we can make some phone calls, do some homework. Thank you, Deanna. Which one of these amendments will work? And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 851. We have 4 and 2 minutes, so we will adjourn.